Before we get into today's Defenders podcast, let's take a quick minute to thank our sponsors at TrueCar. In order to feel comfortable that you're getting a fair price, you're going to need pricing context, information that's going to empower you to feel confident. And guess what? With TrueCar, you'll see what other people in your local market paid for the car you want. And from there, you can connect with a local TrueCar certified dealer and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Using TrueCar, you can easily find the car you want. TrueCar is going to show you what other people in your area paid for the car you want. Now you know what a fair price is, so you can feel as confident as Matt Murdock walking around New York City. Once you register, you'll see real pricing on actual inventory. This is competitive pricing offered to you only by a TrueCar certified dealer for an actual vehicle on their lot. It's pricing you'll see before going to a dealership, so you can feel confident when you show up. With TrueCar, you can connect with a local certified dealer of your choosing, so you can enjoy a quick, easy buying experience. TrueCar customers are more likely to enjoy a faster buying process when they connect with TrueCar certified dealers. And TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off of MSRP. So when you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states. Marvel's Daredevil and Jessica Jones are both over, but we're just getting started talking about both of the title characters from those two Marvel Netflix shows in the context of The Defenders, which is happening very, very soon, just a couple days away from the release of The Defenders on August 18th. Hello, everybody. I'm Josh Wigler here with my good buddy, the only guy I know whose hand is bigger than the ancient ninjas that Matt Murdock fights on the reg, Jim Gibbons. Jim Gibbons, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing very well, Josh. I'm excited to talk some street-level superheroes with you.
Street-level superheroes, that's the theme song of a podcast.
Let's workshop that a little bit, but I think we're off to a great start.
As like a first attempt, I feel like that wasn't so bad.
No, that was really good for a first attempt.
Well, we're singing, we're happy, we're excited. Jim was introduced in our first Defenders pre-show podcast just a couple of days back. We're both very excited today because, as you guys would not have been able to tell because the great Alex Kidwell is an expert editor, but we were having some massive connection issues on that podcast. And right now we're talking very cleanly, very smoothly, very swiftly. I'm happy, Jim. Are you happy?
I'm very happy. I have to say that was some editing wizardry last time. But now it's great. We can actually talk, like, almost as if we're in the same room, Josh. It's amazing.
It's almost as if we are in the same room, but we are not.
It's like we live in the future, and technology can allow us, on two different coasts, to feel as though we're in the same room together.
I like technology. All right. I also like the Marvel Netflix universe, which we are talking about today as we continue our pre-show coverage of The Defenders. What's happening today? This is what's happening. We're talking about Daredevil. We're talking about Jessica Jones. We're going to focus on those two characters, one half of Marvel's Defenders. And on Friday, we are going to post our third and final preseason podcast talking about Luke Cage and Iron Fist. And we'll give some final predictions before we get into the proper Defenders series. If you have not yet done so, subscribe to the podcast. I am told that our feed is live, or it's almost live. It'll be live soon, hopefully by the time you're listening to it. postshowrecaps.com/Marvel. You will subscribe to all of our good shenanigans that are happening here as we are talking about the Marvel universe. Very exciting stuff. Jim, you're excited. I can tell. I can sense it.
I am. I've been. I think I mentioned in the last podcast. I've been doing a lot of Defenders research, kind of familiarizing myself with as much Defenders history as possible outside of the knowledge I already had of these characters and the Defenders as a concept. And I'm just bursting with nerd excitement here to really delve deep on all these characters. So let's do it, man. Let's do it.
Let's delve deep into Daredevil. Let's talk about Daredevil first. Of course, Daredevil being the first series that Netflix unveiled as part of its partnership with Marvel. It's the only one of these shows that has actually earned a second season that we've already seen. I think every single one of these shows has earned a second season order. But Daredevil is the only one that we have seen two seasons of this show. So certainly this is the character that has had the most attention on Netflix so far. I think entering the Marvel Netflix Netflix universe, Daredevil is by far and away the most recognizable quantity for anybody who isn't a big comic book fan to begin with. I know that you, Jim, and I'm only just now remembering this, aren't you like a big fan of the Ben Affleck Daredevil movie?
I'm maybe one of like the three Ben Affleck Daredevil apologists out there. I think it's when that movie came out, when I saw it, I just liked it. I don't know. You know, I didn't have a lot of history with Daredevil before that, so I went into it with low expectations, and I was just excited to see kind of a comic book movie. And I loved it, man. And honestly, I understand this opinion does not hold up as well years later, but at the time, I enjoyed it, and so I defend it now. But I've got to say, I feel like my fingers are crossed. I feel like Bullseye might show up in season 3, and if we can get Colin Farrell back.
Oh,
that'll be the real victory.
You know, I promise I won't bring up Kevin every single time we podcast, but I do
quit
remember...
talking about the other man in the relationship, Josh.
I know. I'm on a date with this guy, and I can't stop talking about my ex. It's terrible. But I do remember one of the very first podcasts, if not the first podcast that Kevin and I ever did as we were launching into all of these Marvel shows, it was right before Daredevil premiered, and we were doing our Daredevil pre-show, and we paused down in the middle of our pre-show to watch the Ben Affleck movie, just to be like, you know, we haven't really seen that in a while. Maybe we should watch that and then come back. And then we watched it, and then we came back on the air, and we were like, yeah, that wasn't great. So that's my memory of the Daredevil movie that existed. Although I will say, Jim, I saw that movie twice in theaters in the same day when it came out. So who am I to judge?
See, I mean, it captured some imagination at the time, you know, and I think it's one of those things, like I'm one of those people where it's like, if a movie makes you cry, it's like, even if a lot of that movie is bad, the fact that it made me cry in like one scene makes me go like, all right, well, there was something there. And I didn't cry during Ben Affleck's Daredevil movie, as I think maybe many other people did for a different reason. But
I was going to say that Evanescence scene is a real tearjerker.
I can't hear that song without thinking of that training sequence with all those bags getting sliced open with size.
And then she immediately gets killed, right? Like she
pretty much.
She's like pumped up on Evanescence and just gets bullseyed very shortly after that, I think.
Yeah, that's what we call a masterclass in screenwriting right there.
All right. Well, I think then it's only fitting that we started our conversation about Daredevil in the same hallowed ground that Kevin and Mahadeo and I once traveled. But let's talk about the actual Daredevil of the Marvel Netflix universe, the Devil of Hell's Kitchen. Jim, what are your thoughts on the Daredevil series as we've seen so far? Thumbs up, better than Ben Affleck, or worse than Ben Affleck?
Well, I mean, you know, much as I am outside of Daredevil, just a Ben Affleck fan, I have to say, Charlie Cox's Daredevil as Matt Murdock, or as I like to call him, Sad Murdock, has done a lot better as Daredevil.
He is very sad. He's often so sad.
Sad Murdock, his whole show is about him being sad. It's like, you know, Peter Parker as Spider-Man is always like, I've got all these cute girls that want to date me, but I think I'm a nerd, and I've got to save the city, and I've got to help Aunt May, and he's really torn, but in like kind of a fun way. And Daredevil's always just like, my life is just so many decisions and so many directions, I'm just going to hang my head.
Ugh, justice is hard.
It's the hardest.
Law school was tough. It's brutal. Yeah, he is very sad all the time, and he is, you know, he's really our guy who is the brooding hero. I mean, Jessica Jones is reluctant in her own ways as well, but I think that we get out of Daredevil a guy who's not always sure that he's on the right track. He's in confessional, and he's talking about, I don't know if I'm doing the right thing. He's confessing who he is to Karen Page by the end of season 2, and we don't really know what the fallout of that is going to be at this point. But I think that he's also a guy who likes being Daredevil a lot more than he'd care to admit. Like, if he were to really do that, you know, look into his own soul, like to really, like, you know, listen to his own heartbeat with that super hearing that he has, I think that he would really recognize, I do enjoy beating people up. It's kind of fun, and that makes me feel kind of bad. So you have that aspect of Daredevil on the show that I think is it's a fascinating dynamic for that character.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely kind of initially has that reluctant hero vibe, and then you kind of later realize, like, nah, heroing is not really, like, reluctant for him. It's almost like he views it as, like, his sin, in a way. I mean, which goes to kind of, like, the Catholic guilt of so much of his character. It's like he realizes that he loves beating the crap out of people, but he also realizes that that's technically bad. And I love how that makes him a torn character, but I think it sets him up, right, to be on this team, on the Defenders, you've got some big attitudes on that team, but he is definitely going to be just like the broodiest, moodiest guy on the team.
So what are we expecting from him in the Defenders? You know, we haven't really seen him get along too well with other people when he is crime fighting alongside people, like a little bit of a reluctant alliance with Frank Castle towards the end of season two. He sort of starts getting on the same page with Elektra right before Elektra gets yanked off the screen in, I think, a considerably less epic way than we lost Jennifer Garner in the original Daredevil movie. Like, I have to give the edge to Jennifer Garner's loss as Elektra. But how do you think he's going to play along with these other three? Like, do you expect Daredevil to kind of be team leader? Is he going to be the rallying person of the Defenders here, or do you think that he's going to be reluctant when he has to join up with these other three heroes?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I think at the end of the day, he's going to be the guy they have the hardest time to sign up, so to speak, for the Defenders. I think when you look at Luke Cage, he's a guy with like a real sense of morality and doing what's right and doing it no matter what, in a sense, a little bit more than any of the other characters. I think Jessica Jones, at the end of the day, she's a hired gun in a lot of ways. I think that's going to get her into this situation easy. And Danny Rand so far has been established as mostly aloof. So I think... who knows, but he'll be eager to just have any friends, because having no friends was a big part of his series. But I think Daredevil is going to be reluctant, but I think he's eventually going to emerge a little bit as a leader, in the same way that you've got, like, he's a bit of a Batman type. He doesn't play well with others, but Batman also is like one of the most renowned leaders in the DC universe, while also being the most renowned loner in the DC universe. So I think Daredevil is going to kind of rise to the top as the series goes, but I feel like he's not going to be like fully on board until later in the series.
And it's obviously an ensemble show. You know, we've had a lot of time to invest in these characters. We've invested in four different shows, or at least three of the four of the different shows that have come out already. But do you think that Daredevil is going to be the one that is the most like readily identifiable protagonist of this show? Like, if the story is going to thread through one of these Defenders, do you think that it's going to be Matt Murdock?
Well, I mean, I was going to say, when you said identifiable, I was like, he's literally the only one of these four with a superhero costume.
Fair enough, yeah.
So, yeah, I think everyone, he's going to be walking around with the rest of them, and people are going to be like, oh, who are those people in hoodies walking around with Daredevil? What's going on?
That's a really good point, though. Like, are we facing a situation where Matt Murdock is going to be the only one of the Defenders with a costume, or are the rest of the team, are they going to get on board? Are we going to see them power up? Are we going to see them suit up? Or will there be no costumes at all? Like, will Matt Murdock be like, you know, I feel overdressed. Yeah. I should probably just wear a suit and tie.
Man, it's funny. I'm going to step back, and I know you guys on the podcast have talked about it, but I haven't had a chance to talk about it, so I'm going to talk about my frustration with the end of Daredevil season one, where he's previously had the stuffing kicked out of him by the Kingpin at every meeting, but then as soon as episode 13 rolls around and that dude in that garage has finished building his costume, he is suddenly able, with renewed confidence due to his cool outfit, I guess, to beat the Kingpin. And I feel like so many shows, these origin shows or a lot of origin comic books, there's this idea of like, as soon as they accept this idea of this hero they are, suddenly they have this like renewed faith in themselves, which I guess their costume then lets them win fights they couldn't otherwise win. But it is one of the more fantastical elements of a fairly grounded first season for Daredevil, is that when he finally puts on the red suit. And so I think the level of costuming on Defenders will also be like a pretty early indicator of how outside the street level superhero game the show is going to go.
This is a good segue into Jessica Jones. What's her superhero alias in the comics again? Jewel, is that right?
Yeah, though you know, I think she's been Jessica Jones more recognizably than Jewel ever, yeah.
But she had the incredible costume. And I think that they even made a reference to that in the Jessica Jones season that we saw. I think there's like a throwaway line. I'm blanking on the exact moment, but I feel like they brought it up. I don't think that Jessica Jones is going to be the type that is going to trade in her signature look for spandex. Like, I think that she is going to be very thumbs down on team uniforms as we go through the Defenders.
No, I agree. And honestly, I think that it works better for her character. It's gonna work well for just kind of the level of the show. So many female superhero costumes can historically border on ridiculous.
Yes.
And while I think, you know, modern movies have done a much better job portraying the female superhero costume, I think Jessica Jones in the leather jacket, it's a pretty good look. And it's also like a good, like, just kicking down doors, taking names look, which is, you know, presumably what they're going to be doing on this show to defend New York.
So give me your thoughts on Jessica Jones and Kristen Ritter in the role, especially. I think that this was a show, even though for me and Kevin, when Kevin and I were talking about the show, I really started to lose patience with the narrative of the season around that episode 10 turning point. Was really, really tough for me. But I loved Kristen Ritter all throughout. She's just like such a sardonic personality, very sarcastic, very witty, very naturally, you know, exudes cool bitterness, and has just been fantastic, in my opinion, as this character. Are you as high on Kristen Ritter as Jessica Jones as I am?
Yeah, I thought she was fantastic, and I think when it's hard for me to talk about any of these characters without talking a little bit about the shows themselves, right? And I think if you look at a lot of the Marvel TV series, Kristen Ritter as Jessica Jones is like, I did not see that casting coming, but as soon as you saw her in the role, it was like, all right, there's something here. You see what they saw and you see why they cast her. And she embodied a role that, while, you know, has a relatively short comic book history compared to the rest of these characters. And it's interesting because I think the Marvel TV series oftentimes find very charismatic, very good actors, and they've done it in these Netflix shows most of the time. But it's also, you know, it's like Jessica Jones, I feel like in ways suffered a similar problem that the S.H.I.E.L.D. spinoff Agent Carter did, where you had a very charismatic cast, but the show felt like it was really spinning its wheels for stuff for them to do after a while. And thankfully, the cast was very watchable. But I think that's the thing with Jessica Jones, is it's a very watchable cast, and her dynamic with David Tennant was very intense and very creepy in a lot of ways, but it was made for compelling TV. And so what I'm really interested to see in Defenders with her is how she branches out from what's an extremely personal story in her first season, and how, you know, and it's going to be the interesting thing with a lot of this, but how do these characters play with others? And she's been the most in her own world of any of these characters. So I'll be curious to see how she branches out when put in the group dynamic.
Yeah, so what's your prediction for that? Because that first season of Jessica Jones is so personal. And it is, you know, as much as she is going around punching the crap out of stuff, it really is an internal war for her against Kilgrave, against this guy who violated her so deeply, you know, was inside of her head and was completely controlling her for so long. And it took her so long to free herself from that, and she actually kills the guy. Like, how much of that Kilgrave baggage is going to be here in the Defenders with Jessica? Do you expect that to be a big thrust of her story, or do you think that it's going to not play as much of a role here, and maybe that's something that they're saving for season two of Jessica Jones?
I think you've hit the nail right on the head, because I think the big thing, and honestly, maybe my biggest concern for Defenders as a show, is the fact that every single one of these seasons of these Netflix Marvel TV shows has been very, very, very character-driven for the main hero. Daredevil season 2 gets out of like a pure Matt Murdock story the most, but every single other one of them is like, here's who this character is, here is their problem, and let's follow them too many episodes each season in that direction. And so Jessica Jones, I think she comes in, she's, I think, not going to, this is my prediction, I don't think they're going to delve too much into that baggage of how intense season one was. I'm sure they'll make reference to it, but her deflection of so much of the horrible stuff that happens to her in comedy is what makes like some of the very intense aspects of her season, you know, not just too hard to watch, because it is very intense. I think she's going to be kind of like some of the funniest stuff on Defenders, I think, is going to come from her, because her delivery is so good on her own show that I feel like when she's playing off the rest of these guys, she's just going to be giving Daredevil and Luke Cage and Danny Rand a hard time the whole time, and I think it's going to be delightful.
I was going to say, how excited are you for Jessica Jones to just be giving Danny Rand the business, like in and out all day long, like all 8 episodes? It's just going to be Jessica Jones noogieing Danny Rand.
Daredevil's reaction will be the same. Luke Cage's reaction will be the same. They'll all just be, you know, he's such a, Danny Rand is such a goofball in his series. They really don't establish him as having any like credible skills other than like some kung fu. He has no interpersonal skills, and I feel like he's going to be the butt of all the jokes. But I think Jessica's going to lay into him extra hard, and it's going to be awesome.
What do you think about supporting cast from both of these characters? We know that a few of these guys are going to be in The Defenders. We know Foggy Nelson, Karen Page, they will be on the show. Jessica's neighbor, Malcolm, is going to be on The Defenders as well. and of course Trish Walker. It's Patsy. She's not yet Hellcat. Are we going to get some Hellcat in the Defenders here? What do you think about these supporting characters? Who are you the most excited to see across the Daredevil and Jessica Jones supporting cast popping up in the Defenders?
I have tried to stay away from any spoilers going into this, so I come in fresh. So maybe this has been announced somewhere, but my big fingers crossed, I hope it happens, cameo is I want to see the Kingpin.
Yeah, me too.
I love Vincent D'Onofrio as the Kingpin. Man, he is so fun to watch.
Yeah, and I was not even mad that he was so briefly on season two. Like, I thought that was a really perfect use of Kingpin. It's just, I think it was only two episodes. Maybe he was there for a third. It was a really quick arc, everything that happened with the Kingpin in prison. And I love that that's just where he is in the Marvel Netflix universe right now. And I think a sparing use of Kingpin is really, really smart. I don't know that I want Kingpin to be a big bad in the Defenders. I would love for him to be involved, but I do think that he works best when it's him versus Daredevil, and I hope that we see a much larger dose of him in Daredevil season 3. But I hope we get at least a little bit of Kingpin here, because that's another character dynamic. Like, imagine him, you know, chewing scenery across from Jessica Jones. Like, just imagine that dynamic.
Good.
Imagine them, like, punching the crap out of each other, too. Like, that would be incredible.
I agree. And I think, he was so briefly in season two, but the scenes were so good that you were like, yeah, I don't need you to spread this Kingpin any thinner on this season. Like, just keep it, like, full potency Kingpin on this. But I think the thing that a lot of the Marvel stuff, they've just had a hard time, like, with villains, right? And Marvel Comics has a long history of heroes versus heroes, you know, Civil War, Secret Wars. Their best villains are often their heroes, and it makes it tough when you get into a lot of these series to really pick a villain and cast someone in that villain and make that character as enjoyable and as watchable, and you root for him. And Kingpin in season one of Daredevil, you know he's the bad guy, but you root for him. And I was like, that's one of the things a lot of Marvel movies have been missing, is a villain that compelling. And so I think it's good to keep him lesser used, because I think if you overdo it, the more your villain becomes part of your regular cast, the more the villain has to be kind of flawed and make more mistakes and becomes less of a threat potentially. So I like the idea of Kingpin sitting back, maybe even till season 4 of Daredevil, when he makes a big play, a comeback, because it would hit that much harder.
In like 2020.
And I don't know when you want to talk predictions, but I have a little bit of a theory as to how he could show up in Defenders.
Yeah, lay it on me.
Well, so I think it was in your guys' last Luke Cage podcast, Kevin laid out the theory of the first issue of Brian Michael Bendis's New Avengers run, where Daredevil and Luke Cage are going into Riker's, the prison, or is it the Raft? One of the many Marvel prisons.
I'm pretty sure it's the Raft, actually. Okay. I don't know why I remember that, but I do think it's the Raft.
So they're going into the prison, and at the time, Electro, the Spider-Man villain Electro, sets a power outage and leads to a prison break. And it leads to the formation of the New Avengers, which are kind of the heroes that could answer the call most quickly to this New York-based prison riot. And so Luke Cage is there, Daredevil was there, Spider-Man was there, Captain America was there. And so I think it
doesn't Daredevil peace out on that cruise, like, yeah, no, thanks for the invite, but I'm done. I'm not gonna do that. I'm not gonna be an Avenger.
And honestly, I think that will inform a lot of his character in Defenders as well, because yeah, the scene in the comic is Captain America was like, hey, that was pretty good, we work pretty well together, and Daredevil is basically like very moodily like, I don't work well in teams, thanks a lot, Cap, but no thanks. And then just
right.
Jumps off a building and runs away.
Smoke bomb.
Yeah. So I think, right, like, you've got a situation where we're starting the show. Luke Cage, as we last see him, is being taken away by police officers, presumably to go back to prison somewhere. And what you have kind of at the end of Iron Fist is you've got Claire Temple as the one person who connects all these people. And she's just met Danny Rand, who, just happens to be super rich. And so I see, you know, some sort of threat. I don't think it'll be a prison break per se initially that brings them together, but I see some sort of threat that causes Claire Temple to kind of bring them together. And she's like, she gets Jessica Jones in as muscle to accompany Matt Murdock and Danny Rand, financing the mission to get Luke Cage out of prison to kind of unite the foursome. And when they all go into the prison, some sort of prison break happens. And as you know, prisons are full of hallways, Josh. And on
I've
these shows,
this.
They love fighting in hallways.
How many hallway fights are we getting by the end of the Defenders? Like, at least 12, right?
I think so. I mean, how many? There's 8 episodes, so you've got at least 8 hallway fight scenes.
One per episode.
I mean, you know, just keeping people are always walking down hallways. I walk down hallways every day.
All day. You know, it's just like all you do is you're just a corridor walker.
But yeah, but I you know, if you look at the situation, right, like they've got to get Luke Cage out of prison and presumably he's going back to Seagate. But like, you know, they're all in New York. He's probably in a New York holding cell for some amount of time, maybe in a New York prison for some amount of time. You've got a scene maybe with Luke Cage meeting Kingpin in prison, which would be great.
That would be good.
You've maybe got, you know, when they're in this prison, some sort of prison break happens and all of a sudden Matt Murdock, you know, runs into the Kingpin and who knows who else might be in that prison. Could Diamondback also be in that prison?
Oh, he could be.
So I don't know. I mean, maybe that's a little rip straight from the comic book pages, but it's also like prison breaks cause villains. And here's the other thing, right? The prison break in New Avengers sets up years of comics because basically it puts a lot of villains on the street and then you find out who caused the prison break. And it's an inciting incident that kind of sets up a lot of probably about a near decade of Marvel comics kind of from that moment bleeds out into hundreds of storylines. And a lot of these second seasons, like I'm not necessarily sure what Jessica Jones season two might have in store, but as a private detective,
right,
if her job is to hunt down a bunch of escaped criminals, a prison break helps that. I think I'm wondering what Defenders, because I don't think it will focus a lot on the individual characters. I'm wondering what it will put into their series to later, you know, kind of push events forward in season two of a lot of these shows.
All right. Before we wrap up this podcast, we are talking about Jessica and Matt Murdock primarily. What do you think these two are going to make of each other?
I think Jessica Jones is going to be unimpressed with Matt Murdock, and I think Matt Murdock is going to want to stay as far away from the rest of these weirdos as possible.
You don't think that he's going to be impressed at all in Jessica's abilities?
I think it's not a matter of him being impressed. I think Daredevil's whole character trait is taking everything on himself so heavily that he'll probably be like, I can't worry about these other people and their problems. I've got to worry about my problems, which are much bigger.
Is he going to get along with anybody?
I think he will eventually, because especially because Charlie Cox as Matt Murdock on his show, they've made Matt Murdock, I feel like, more likable than he is in a lot of his more traditional comic book runs. But yeah, I think he'll eventually get along, but I think he's going to be the hardest sell to join the team.
All right. Well, we will find out how that's going to shape up when we get to the Defenders, which is premiering in just a couple of days here. We've got one more preseason podcast coming your way, actually on the day that the Defenders drops. That will be on August 18th. It's going to be one more preview. We're going to be focusing on Luke Cage and Iron Fist. Wait for it. It's happening. That's coming up on Friday on August 18th. Then we are going to be in the proper season of the Defenders. We are going to be talking about two episodes per podcast twice a week. That's going to be on Mondays and Thursdays is when you can expect those podcasts to drop. Make sure you don't miss an episode. Postshowrecaps.com/Marvel. That's the way to subscribe and make sure you're listening to every single one of these episodes. We would love to get your feedback as well. Postshowrecaps.com/feedback. Or you can tweet at us. Jim is at the Jim Gibbons. I am at Round Howard. Jim, anything else on Daredevil and Jessica Jones before we sign off?
I was going to say the one thing I did forget to mention, and it's kind of a cool little tidbit, is the Defenders, one of Marvel's greatest non-team, as they're often called, one of their number for a while pretty consistently was Patsy Walker Hellcat.
So how about that?
Maybe we do see Hellcat make a little few steps forward that'll set up maybe her full appearance in Jessica Jones season two. We will see.
I love Trish Walker. The more Trish Walker, the better. So if they can get her in like full on Hellcat mode, I'm going to be thrilled. I'm going to be very, very pleased with that.
That would be good. More superheroes is good.
More superheroes is good. More superheroes coming your way in just a few days. Take care, everybody. Bye.